Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and Dave Filoni, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have dreamed up over the past 40 years. I'm entertainer writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one and only Dan Z. He and I are recording this on Wednesday, August 5th. This past weekend was kind of a tough time for Star Wars fans, wasn't it, Dan?
Yeah, we're losing a lot of iconic members, not only of the Star Wars community, but just in the world of entertainment.
This is true. This is true. And first and foremost, we lost Wilford Brimley, who for Star Wars fans, you remember him as Nowak, the grumpy old hermit from, Ewoks, The Battle of Endor, TV movie, ran on ABC back in November of 85. And what was a sequel of sorts to Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure, which also ran on ABC, but in November of 84. And the other gentleman we lost, of course, was Tom Pollock, who was the chairman of the American Film Institute, also former head of Universal Pictures. He was 77 when he passed on Saturday. We're going to get to the important role that Tom played in the formation of the Star Wars franchise in the second half of today's show. But back to Brimley. You've seen, Battle for Endor, right, Dan?
I saw both of them when they actually aired, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know we've talked about this, this TV movie on a previous episode of Looking at Lucasfilm, but what we're going to be talking about today is how Brimley got the role of Noah, and it was kind of a roundabout thing. ILM had been hired by 20th Century Fox to do the effects for Ron Howard's Cocoon. That sci-fi fantasy was shot in St. Petersburg, Florida, from August to October of 1984. Now, you've seen that one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a charmer. But George Lucas, he first got to see it in January of 1985. This is when up at ILM, Ken Ralston and Ralph McQuarrie were inserting effect shots into Cocoon. And George, looking at the raw footage, noted two things. Wilford Brimley, even though he was only 49 when he shot Cocoon, had a real gift for playing grumpy old men. And Ron Howard was obviously skilled when it came to mixing, complicated effects work and grounded performances with his actors. So this is why even before Cocoon opened in theaters in June of 85, George reached out to Brimley and offered him the opportunity to play Noah in Ewoks, The Battle of Endor. Brimley said yes, and by May of that same year, he was on set up in the Redwoods around San Rafael. Kind of interesting. It was a fairly lengthy shoot for a TV movie. Warwick Davis, who played Wicket the Ewok in 1983's Return of the Jedi, 1984's Caravan of Courage, and 1985's Battle for Endor, told Starlog magazine that he was on set for 7 weeks starting in May. And then after a several week pause in production, was back on set shooting additional scenes for the Battle of Endor. And what I kind of find interesting about that, Dan, is that's kind of how Marvel Studios operates these days. I mean, they'll shoot the script. They'll do a work in progress, cut of the film, eyeball it and go, okay, we need a couple of additional scenes, or we need to reshoot that. And here's George doing, with that exact same battle plan, only back in the mid-80s.
Man always ahead of his time.
He was. In fact, the weirdest part of it is 35 years ago this week, Dan, Warwick was back on set with Brimley, again, up in the Redwoods of San Rafael, finishing the reshoots at the Battle of Endor. So by this point, Wilford wasn't necessarily a happy camper. He didn't like the two gentlemen that George had hired to direct the film, Jim and Ken Weed, a brother team of directors kind of like the Russo brothers on Endgame and Infinity War. So at this point, Brimley's only taking direction from Joe Johnston, which, you know, again, I don't have to explain to you who Joe Johnston is. But
that's a pretty good pedigree. And yeah. Royce to Marvel, too, with Captain America.
There you go. There you go. You know, but anyway, the interesting thing is, speaking of directors, though, it was while Ron Howard was up at Skywalker Ranch, you know, just sort of signing off on the effects work that Ralph and Ken were doing at Cocoon in the late winter of 85. By the way, this was really good effect stuff because the very next year, Cocoon took home that year's Academy Award for effects.
Yes.
But George approached Ron while he was up at Skywalker and asked him if he'd be interested in doing Willow. So, you know, long story short, Battle of Endor, not the greatest TV movie. No. And curiously, still not available over on Disney Plus. But it did lead to some interesting things, like the Blurgs. Yes. You know, which
no idea stays on the cutting room floor, which I really like because they it's like a it is like art. You sort of keep an idea and mm-hmm. keep it in your sketchbook, and then eventually you just find inspiration to use it somewhere else, and it works out pretty well.
Then it does. Okay, so let's see what else has gone on since we last recorded. We've got Comic-Con at Home, July 22nd through the 26th,
which was kind of a whimper, really.
Well, you know, I thought that as well, but I wanted to be sure to mention, in fact, because you can go, this panel is available for viewing online right now. There was a panel for Dr. Afra. Can I get that name right again?
Afra.
Why yes. can I not remember this? You know, I love the comic books, and I've been wanting to make time for this, but the audiobook original, they did an hour-long panel on the production of that. But that seems to have been, you know, the only thing that went on. And, you know, I just remember you telling, you know, that wonderful story about, what was it, July of 2018, when you were actually in room 6BCF for what was supposed to be just the 10th anniversary of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. And then you guys got a whole lot more news.
An explosive moment where there was buzz about different things going on and what they were going to do and what they might continue with. And then when they showed the initial montage, I remember talking about this on Looking at Lucasfilm, but when they showed the initial montage, I thought, well, this is just some nice new stuff they recorded just for everybody at San Diego Comic-Con. But then it turned out mm-hmm. to be the brand new thing. That place is as electric as an environment that I've ever been in the world of fandom. And it was unbelievable. I videoed everybody's reactions and got thousands and thousands of views almost instantaneously. It was just really special. And the nice thing was that Ashley Eckstein and a number of the cast were there, and they were mm-hmm. all very, very touched. And Amy Ratcliffe, who of course now is a big time Star Wars author, mm-hmm. she is a huge Clone Wars fan, and she was moderating the panel. She mm-hmm. didn't know that was going to be the big announcement, and she burst into tears. It was really emotional.
Oh my God, I didn't know that part of the story. Oh, that's great. That's great. I guess something else we should mention that they did panel tangential to Star Wars, but they did a presentation on the Lucas Museum of Narrative Arts, which this $1 billion project is still supposed to open in 2021, Dan. We should probably start talking about this.
Let's do it.
You know, I mean, I'm intrigued alone. Just, you know, George is supposedly going to feature his collection of Norman Rockwell paintings. And likewise, there's supposed to be a fairly sizable Star Wars exhibit in this, but it's 300,000 square feet.
It's sort of painful in a way because this was supposed to be in Chicago.
It was.
And
it was.
We got so close to it actually happening. And then a lot of silliness and political jabber and people, you know, trying to basically get a piece of the pie everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm just pretty much sort of shortchanging everything that really happened. But basically, I'm still bitter about it because if it was in Chicago, I probably would have gotten a chance to see George and say hello to him and get mm-hmm. to experience this more and more frequently than it being across the country from me. But that's okay. They didn't ask me.
If it's any consolation, the very same thing then happened in San Francisco. I mean, face it, you know, the location now in L.A., you know, at Exposition Park is really, you know, the default from those two, you know, more, you know, George was far more enthusiastic about those two sites. But again, we'll catch it when it's out in L.A., when it opens in 2021, though I suspect that the early 2021 opening was previewed since we announced, I think it's sliding a little bit further into
probably here. Not on the table.
Yeah. So the other thing, frankly, I was kind of surprised about coming out of Comic-Con at home was you would think that Disney and Lucasfilm would have taken, you know, advantage of the captive audience, so to speak, everybody who was, you know, tuning in from home to use that to hype season two of Mandalorian, which, by the way, I don't know if you heard the earnings call, you know, just yesterday, but they confirmed that, you know, season two starting in October.
Do you think they saved any announcement to wait until the week that Star Wars Celebration was supposed to happen, and maybe then we'll get something? That makes sense. I mean, that'll be pretty soon.
Yeah. In fact, I actually had a section about Star Wars Celebration in the original show notes for tonight, and I actually cut it out because it was too painful. It's just, you know, I was really looking forward to that. They're going to really look forward to you and I going to Star Wars night and the whole schmear. And that's a happening. So, but
I guess means that when it actually does, it'll be that much better.
There you go. Though for fans of The Mandalorian, though, things didn't get much better than last week's Emmy announcements. Did you see that? 15 nominations.
Remarkable. I know it wasn't the top one, but it was one of the top, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But and the interesting thing is, you know, it's one thing. I mean, face it, given what we learned from, you know, Star Wars, the Mandalorian, that wonderful behind the scenes series they did on Disney Plus, the Disney Gallery, I think it was called. You know, it's not really a surprise, given what they showed us about how the show was produced, that they scored all sorts of tech. Again, nominations in tech categories. There's outstanding cinematography, three separate nominations for outstanding singer camera picture editing for a drama series, likewise sound editing, sound mixing. And again, just given the look of the show and that sort of thing, not a surprise that it got a nod for outstanding visual effects, outstanding production design, sci-fi fantasy costumes, prosthetic makeup, and even the stunt work. But I have to admit, given they had that wonderful episode of Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, about how the music for the show came together, it was really sweet to see that Ludwig Göransson scored a nomination for Outstanding Music Composition. And
I would love to see that one. And I wish we would have gotten a little more acknowledgement of the acting and the storytelling side, but we really didn't get that.
Well, no, we did get Taika Waititi, for his voice work on IG-11, and Giancarlo Esposito. I mean, he did get a nomination for Outstanding Guest Star as Moff Gideon.
Very true, and I guess being nominated for Best Drama is pretty glorious, of course.
That is huge.
Pablo Hidalgo even acknowledged that on Twitter, and he doesn't really comment on Star Wars very much on social media anymore.
Yeah. I mean, so season one, for a new on a newly launched subscription streaming service. I mean, yeah, I know from conversations with folks at Disney and Lucasfilm, they are just thrilled that it got this level of recognition, and you know, whatever they win, they are certainly using it to hype season two of The Mandalorian. Oh, but by the way, it's worth noting that the two TV movies that we talked about, if you know, this won't be Lucasfilm's first Emmy. They actually took home Emmys for visual effects on Caravan and Courage and The Battle of Endor. Likewise, they also took home two daytime the Star Wars, the Clone Wars, took home two daytime Emmys for Outstanding Special Class Animated Program. That was in 2013 and 2014. And I also wanted to mention that among the nominations they didn't win for was one for Mark Hamill, who in 2015 was nominated as Outstanding Performer in an Animated Program for his vocal performance as Darth Bane in Sacrifice, which was, season 6, episode 13. And I wanted to mention that because, Dan, I so enjoyed your most recent Teaching with Star Wars column.
Thank you.
It's been such a strong series. In fact, the one that immediately preceded this, the one about Leia and her empathy and acceptance in Return of the Jedi, but this one about Yoda and especially the version of Yoda that we see in Clone Wars, and again, 900-year-old character who is still willing to learn, and there's this amazing story that's told over three episodes. What is it? Voices, Destiny, and Sacrifice.
Yes,
but this is also where we get Mark Hamill doing Darth Bane. And again, it's a great performance by him that's, honestly, such an amazing contrast to his work as Luke Skywalker.
It is glorious. And he always does things sort of against type. I mean, I guess he was the voice of Chucky. That's certainly as far from Luke Skywalker as you can get. Yep. What I like about continuing to write these things, and I'm very grateful to Lucasfilm and continues to have me do them, is that I get to explore not only what it means to be a teacher, what it means to learn, what it means to change your point of view, to sort of swallow your pride, or as you acknowledge, even though because you're a teacher doesn't mean you stop learning and stop growing. And I think that's really important. And I think the one coming out next week too.
That is a great, great message. And I say that coming from a family of teachers. Honestly, I think that's the one thing the American education system, I would love this if they would embrace this as an idea, but the notion of we really need to teach people how to continue to learn.
You must be a lifelong learner to be a successful educator, in my opinion.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And if you think about, how every day, whether it's, learning how to use your new phone or learning how to use your new laptop or learning how to use a new piece of software or, picking up a book about a subject you've never, touched on before. I mean, I think it's very important to keep yourself open to those sorts of things. And, especially when people get to be my age in their 60s, they start to close off, because it's like brain full, in fact, we just got a new remote for they came in and changed all the units here at the house, and I now have to learn how to use a brand new remote. And
oh, that's fun.
Nancy's going to take me out back and hit me in the head with a rock and bury me at some point, because it's just sort of like she's the intelligent one of the house. I'm the one who's, where is the on switch? So, but at the same time, I hate to bring this up because it's like, we have the 60-year-olds who, need to be open to learn new things. And then we have the 20-year-olds who seem to know it all. And, I have to admit, I sort of enjoyed John Boyega in the past week. Where did you see what he tweeted out about how he's done with the Star Wars franchise?
I did. It's like it's the classic tradition of people from one of the three eras of Star Wars storytelling and cinema saying that they're pretty much done. I mean, Harrison Ford, Ewan McGregor, you know. So now we've got the mantle, and it's a good group, but they, you know, it's easy for me to say, well, never say never, pal. I mean, just ask Sean Connery about that. But, yep, you know, I mean, yep, it's a long, yep, career, and I think you can clearly, and basically Oscar Isaac had said he's only going to do Star Wars again if he wants to buy another house. My guess is they're hopefully just having a phone because they're sick of people everywhere they go asking them about it. But
yeah,
I don't know. Of course, you hope that they'll revisit it. And I still believe that, you know, that will happen. But I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, you know, just not to bring another franchise in here, but there's the famous, you know, Leonard Nimoy wrote the book that I am not Spock. And then, what is it, 20 years later, he's not only appearing in Star Trek movie, he's directing them. In fact, he would then went on to do the J.J. Abrams Spock movie, you know, or the Star Trek movie. So, you know, he kind of went in an entirely different direction. So, long story short, I know what Joan Baez is saying now, but, you know, I don't think Billy Dee Williams thought he'd be doing Lando again, you know, some 37 years later. So, but you're right. Never say never. Now, I have to ask about the other thing that popped up online, Star Wars related, over the past week. Did you see what fake Disney Facts did with his TikTok video?
You may not have noticed this, but Aaron Adams actually asked me on Twitter about it, and he said he expected a full dissertation on looking at Lucasfilm or Coffee with Kenobi about it. And I did talk about it this week on Facebook Live, but I definitely have lots of thoughts on this.
I have to say that at first, well, I mean, no, I want to start by saying I'm not normally a fan of these, you know, revisit something you're familiar with, but look at it from a different, you know, point of view. But I actually think some of this has merit, you know? I mean, take, for example, you know, rather than calling Episode One The Phantom Menace, The Rise of Skywalker, and it's like, well, yeah, we do get to see little Anakin Skywalker and come into some of his powers.
Should we just run over what they all say?
Okay.
Yeah, so, Episode One, of course, is Phantom Menace, and he suggests The Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. Episode Two is Attack of the Clones. He suggests it's Revenge of the Sith, mm-hmm, because the Sith actually come back at the end under the guise of Darth Tyrannus. Mm-hmm. Episode Three is Revenge of the Sith, but he says it should be Attack of the Clones because that's when they attack after Order 66.
Mm-hmm.
Episode Four is A New Hope, but he says that should be Return of the Jedi because Luke is back in the fold after being, you know, a child, mm-hmm, when we last saw him. A baby, in fact. Episode Five is Empire, and he says it should be The Force Awakens because, well, I guess that's pretty self mm-hmm inherent. Episode Six is Return of the Jedi. He says it should be The Last Jedi because Obi-Wan and Yoda are gone. Episode Seven is Force Awakens, and mm-hmm, he says it should be The Empire Strikes Back because we get the rise of the First Order.
Mm-hmm.
Episode Eight is The Last Jedi. He says it should be A New Hope because of Rey, and then Episode Nine, he says, should be The Phantom Menace instead of The Rise of Skywalker. So tell me, you think it's got some merit. And I do think there's some clever stuff here, particularly some of the stuff towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that this doesn't work, and I do applaud this young man for doing this because I think it was fun, it was clever, and I think he probably did it tongue-in-cheek too, but I don't know that for certain.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with this is that none of these titles that are re-switched are really encompassing the overall story. Episode One should be The Phantom Menace because the whole thing is about Palpatine slowly growing behind the scenes. It's so subtle that at first it wasn't really clear why it was called The Phantom Menace.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was pretty slick. Shouldn't be The Rise of Skywalker because Anakin Skywalker shows up and says yippee and flies around in a Naboo starfighter, but doesn't really do that much. Episode Two should definitely be Attack of the Clones because that is when they first attack at the end of the Battle of Geonosis. It shouldn't be Revenge of the Sith because there's no revenge. They're not getting back. They don't do anything that is revenge worthy for the level of the Sith. Episode Three, Revenge. Well, they're flipped on here. So episode three should be Revenge of the Sith because the clones, yes, they attack, but it's much, much more significant to the overall story that the Sith do actually get the revenge and wipe out the Jedi. And I could go on this, but essentially these titles, the original titles, and I will grant you the Attack of the Clones is the weakest of all mm-hmm. the actual titles, but none of them are including in what's most important to the story. Episode 9 shouldn't be the Phantom Menace because he's not a phantom. Mm-hmm. The entire galaxy knows it's Palpatine because he literally broadcasts it from some weird frequency that has not been around.
Mm. Interesting point.
I can literally talk about it for 15 more minutes.
No. Okay, again, I always enjoy your insight, and you know, coming from both your English teaching background as well as fandom. I mean, I love the Venn diagram here, but I have to admit, playing sort of slippy slidey with which title is attached to which film. You know, what really comes across here is they really did deliver on the serial titles. I mean, these, if you look at them sort of stripped away from their films, they do have a lovely 1930s, 1940s quality to them, and remember, that's, the Buck Rogers and the Flash Gordon, serials are what, inspired George back in the day to do this. So I don't know. I it was a fun exercise that I think, again, to applaud fake Disney facts for, just making us look at it different and realize,
that was been fun in contributing to the conversation in a positive way. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all right, folks, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we get back, as promised, we're going to talk a little bit about Tom Pollock and his part in the creation of the Star Wars franchise.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Dear Colgate, I love that you love that I love being at home. You even let me whiten my teeth from home.
Because you know how I feel about getting up from my cloud couch.
The Colgate Optic White LED Kit gives professional level results in just 10 minutes a day for 10 days when used as directed.
And that's why, Colgate, I want you to meet my parents.
Because ever since meeting you, I've been living life to the brightest.
Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
And we're back. By the way, again, I got a gratuitous plug here. Dan, again, my co-host here, is a soon-to-be-published author of the Star Wars book, which he co-authored with Cole Horton and Pablo Hidalgo. It's still slated to hit store shelves on October 20th, right?
It sure is. As far as I can tell, it's full speed ahead.
Okay. But it's 224 pages of Star Wars goodness, folks. But if you can't wait till then, just yesterday, a brand new Star Wars book came out, Poe Dameron Freefall, written by an Alex Segura. Is that correct?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering, again, I realized you get sent all of this stuff. Did you manage to check this book out? Because it's... What about The Adventures of a Young Poe Dameron, right?
Yeah, I have the audio in the actual book itself, and it basically goes over him and explains his relationship with a lot of the people we meet from The Rise of Skywalker, including the character portrayed by, Felicity. What's her name? Why can't I think of her name?
Zuri.
Zuri Bliss is the I can't think of the actress.
We'll grade in a curve here. You got the Felicity part. I think she actually starred in the show Felicity.
Yeah, which of course means happiness. I would be happy if I could remember her name, but that's okay.
A good read. Offer any insight?
It's good. I'm a little Poe Dameron. I've become a little bit lukewarm on, pun intended, ever since The Rise of Skywalker, because I think his characterization was drastically different from the other films. Mm-hmm. But this at least makes an attempt to explain sort of why this place and his old association is part of his kryptonite. So it's fun. It's fun.
Okay. All right. Well, again, if you're looking for something to read till the Star Wars book shows up, you know, to check out Poe Dameron Freefall. Anyway, top of the show, promised to talk about Tom Pollack, the chairman of Universal Pictures, as well as the American Film Institute. But that was back in the 1990s and 2000s. Back in 1971, Tom was just a lawyer. To be specific, he was George Lucas's lawyer. And his client had a very unusual request when it came to his next production deal with a major studio. The following I pulled from an interview that Pollack did in 2015 with Deadline. In fact, this was part of the lead up to Force Awakens. You know, people were drilling down into the history of the Star Wars franchise. And Tom, as the story picks up, it's 1971. I became George's attorney. He had just done THX 1138. With Francis Ford Coppola for Warner Brothers, an extension of the short he did at USC. And so the first deal that Tom helps negotiate for George, two-picture deal with United Artists, and it calls for George to write the script for American Graffiti and then to also write an untitled science fiction film in 9 parts. And Tom goes on to say, swear to God, this was in the contract. I know this because when Skywalker Ranch was built, George had a time capsule buried. And one of the things I put in there was that contract, along with the articles of incorporation for Lucasfilm. Anyway, moving forward here, William Huck and Gloria Katz write the screenplay for American Graffiti with George. And when they turn it in, David Picker, who was the then head of United Artists, passes on the project. And David, passed on the second film, but well, that science fiction film in 9 parts. So the Huck Cat script for American Graffiti goes to Universal, actually went all over town. There was a time when American Graffiti almost got made at American International Pictures. But it finally gets made at Universal with Francis Ford Coppola's help. As we've discussed on earlier looking at Lucasfilm, when American Graffiti was finished and shown to the studio, Ned Tennant, the then head of Universal Pictures, didn't like what he saw. And by now, George has actually written the treatment for Star Wars, the full treatment. Universal has an option for George's next movie, and the treatment is submitted to Universal. And they pass on it. And again, they had this option to make Star Wars because they had made American Graffiti. So Jeff Berg, who was George's agent, takes the treatment over to Alan Ladd Jr. at Fox. And Ladd says, okay, I'll make this. And they negotiate the outline of the deal. George gets $50,000 to write the script, another $50,000 to produce the film, and then a final $50,000 payment to direct. Anyway, as you know, Dan and I have talked about on previous shows, American Graffiti comes out and it's a huge hit. You know, it only costs $750,000 to make and sells over $100 million worth of tickets worldwide. And Jeff, George's agent, wants to take advantage of this, you know. So he says to George, look, I can get you a lot more than $150,000. We can get $500,000, maybe $1 million. And George's response is really kind of interesting. George says, look, I'm going to have a lot of money now for American Graffiti. What I really want from the deal we're making with Fox is I see this movie in multi-parts. Tom goes on to say, George and I have had a disagreement over whether it was 6 parts or 9 parts, but this is the way he always saw it. It was always envisioned as a serial. So George goes on to say, and it's important to understand here that George had an innate suspicion of Hollywood studios. So the worst thing that can happen to me is I couldn't make the sequel, or I couldn't make the rest of the series if the first one worked. So you have to make sure that I have the ability to do that. So that part fell to Tom. So instead of taking more money or other things, George used the success of graffiti for that. Tom goes on to say, I want to emphasize that none of this was because George knew that Star Wars was going to be so successful. It was all about, I don't want to have to not have the ability to make the movies I want to make and then have it get lost in what today is known as development hell. So in the negotiations that were going on with Fox, they drew up a contract with Fox's head of business, a gentleman called Bill Immerman, and, Tom, wrote her on the contract. And we came up with an agreement that George would retain the sequel rights. Not all of the stuff that came later, mind you, just the sequel rights. And Fox would then have the first opportunity and the last refusal rights to make those sequels. And, again, looking back, so this is almost 50 years ago now, Dan. But you got to admire the fact that George, rather than going for the quick buck, that followed in the wake of American Graffiti's huge success, he opted for control instead. He took the long view. And more importantly, he had a lawyer who was willing to do what his client wanted.
The history of this thing, as we've talked about a lot, and it's just so beautiful because he took so many risks and did so many things outside the box that no one did. Now it just seems commonplace, but he was such a visionary and in many ways kind of pleasantly stubborn about this. And boy, did it ever pay off for all of us.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, folks, I highly recommend Deadline put up this interview, reprinted it as part of, they ran some lovely tribute pieces to Tom Pollock. And it's worth reading the entirety of this interview because it then talked about, what a canny operator George was. How he used the leverage of, Star Wars' even huger success than American Graffiti to not only go back, to then renegotiate the deal with Fox that, he got the merchandise rights back for the toys. He got the right to limit Fox to just a distribution fee. So much of which sort of set the stage for, that $4 billion deal when Disney, acquired Lucasfilm. That was only possible because George, with the help of Tom Pollock, was able to set this up in such a way that, it became this separate entity, the film was, went out as a 20th Century Fox title, but it was the property of George Lucas. So, anyway. Okay, so that's it for looking at Lucasfilm this week. What's going on over at Coffee with Kenobi these days?
Well, our newest show, we had Ahmed Best, the actor in Jar Jar Binks, and the host of Star Wars Jedi Temple Challenge, which just wrapped up its first season on YouTube, and he was unbelievable. I mean, a true gentleman and a scholar. His knowledge of etymology and storytelling and education was just really inspiring to me. We really had the best time conversing. And I think people will love listening to it if you haven't done so already. And on our Patreon show, CWK Pour Over, if you want to be a member of our CWK Alliance, you can certainly go to our Patreon page. And we are wrapping up our top 15 fictional characters of all time. So be sure to check it out.
Okay, we talked about this on the last show. Who has recently been added to the list?
Let's see. So I believe the time of this airing, 6 through 10 have shown up. But I have two Star Wars characters in 6 through 10, and one of them will be a big surprise. That's what I'll say.
Okay.
One for the world of literature, a character created by Mr. Mark Twain.
Oh, okay. All right. Love me some Mark Twain. I wanted to, you've talked previously on the show about your affection for Solo, A Star Wars Story. I was actually down My mom went into the hospital for a couple of days.
She's okay.
Oh no, she's out now. She's back to her usual. But it meant that somebody had to sort of step in and watch my dad for a couple of days. So I was down in Massachusetts for 4 days, dad sitting. And over the process, I want to say it was either TNT or TBS showed Solo, a Star Wars story.
Hmm? Yeah, I think it was TNT.
Okay. My dad had never seen Solo, a Star Wars story. He didn't get out to theaters to see it. So it's cool. Let's watch this. And he really enjoyed it. And actually, this is only the second time I've seen the film. And it actually holds up fairly well.
It's great. It's just a fun, entertaining romp. I don't know that it necessarily says anything important, but it doesn't always have to. It's just an entertaining, fun movie with great effects and some great performances.
Oh, I agree. But at the same time, after watching it, rather than on a movie screen, on a television, I have to admit that, I my enthusiasm for this rumored continuation of Solo as a Disney Plus project, I think it could work, in that setting. So it would be interesting to see it go forward. So we talked about Coffee with Kenobi. What about on the Patreon side? What's going on there?
Well, like I said, that's where we do our top 15 fictional characters, and we're about to wrap that up. So I'm looking forward to seeing what everybody thinks. And the fun part is on our Patreon message board, people are typing in and adding their top 15 favorite characters as we move along. So everybody's literally a part of the show.
And forgive me for asking, anybody at a catch 22? Ysarian, maybe? No?
No. No.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Going to find out.
Okay. Okay. We'll definitely have to check this out. And speaking of other stuff, you folks want to check out here at the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network, we have a bunch of shows as well. We've got Disney Dish with Lynn Testa. We've got Marvel Us Disney, which I do with Aaron Adams, the gentleman who does all of the editing here. We also have Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your good close personal friend Dan.
That's my favorite fictional character.
We also have Universal Joint with Dustin Fuse. In fact, we're going to be knocking on a show with that over the next couple of days. And likewise, we'll be working on a new I Want That with Shelley Valladolid. Tell you what, folks, if you could do Dan and I a favor, if you could head over to iTunes and rate and recommend not only this show, Looking at Lucasfilm, but also Coffee with Kenobi, that helps send additional ears and eyes our way. On the other hand, if you really, really, really like what you listened to tonight, if you could head over to Bandcamp to subscribe, that then makes it possible to pay for copies of the Star Wars book by Dan Z and Cole Horton and Pablo Hidalgo coming out on October 20th. I think that's enough plugs for tonight, Dan. Let's see. Oh, speaking of plugs, all right. Half the fun of Twitter these days is following what Dan's up to. And again, how is it they find you on Twitter, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Zehr, MRZEHR, and you can find Coffee with Kenobi all over social media. Be sure to like us on Facebook, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and find us on Instagram and Twitter as well.
Terrific. And Nancy wants me to remind you that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media and over on Facebook at JimHillMediaNews.com. Like I said, if you enjoyed the Tom Pollock thing, please head over to Deadline. The full interview is there. And it's again, this guy had a huge part to play in the history of Star Wars. And so the history of Star Wars, hopefully we'll be back with more stories on the next podcast. So till then, take care, folks.